Welcome to the Star Coalition podcast. I'm Luke Kramer, Executive Director of the Star Coalition. Thank you guys for joining us today as we sit down with thought leaders across the research industry and advocacy who are working tirelessly to make a difference in those living with brain disorders. We're excited today to have with us Dr. Lisa Horowitz. She is the staff scientist and clinical psychologist in the National Institute of Mental Health Intramural Research Program at the National Institutes of Health. She serves as a senior clinician with a specialty in child psychology in the Psychiatry Consultation Liaison Service in the Hatfield Clinical Research Center at NIH. But her major focus is really research on the detection of suicide risk in the medical setting. So she's a lead PI on six NIMH suicide prevention protocols that involve validating and implementing a screening tool called the Ask Suicide Screening Questions, or ASQ, in the ER, inpatient medical and surgical, and outpatient primary care settings, really those initial touch points. It's so important that that people get assessed at that moment. Dr. Horowitz is consulting with hospitals, outpatient primary care clinics, and school settings across the country, assisting with implementing suicide risk screening programs and providing guidance on managing patients at risk for suicide. An important topic and a very timely topic. And through all the work that you've done, we can tell where your passion is. But thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
You know, we had a really great conversation the other day, just kind of talking about what we were going to discuss today. And one thing that kept coming up is stigma. Stigma and suicide. Where are we? What are some things that you're seeing around why suicide there's not an open pathway for discussion? And what's happening with stigma around suicide?
Yeah, so we still have a great deal of stigma surrounding any mental health problem, but especially suicide. And I think people are still not talking about it. When you compare suicide to, so can I tell you a little bit about the background of suicide in
Absolutely.
Our country?
Absolutely. Yeah, give us a context of where we are.
Okay. So suicide is an international public health problem. Mm-hmm. Upwards of 800,000 people kill themselves every year all over the world. And in the United States, it's the 10th leading cause of death for adults and the second leading cause of death for children. So more kids die from suicide than from motor vehicle accidents, which used to be a major public health problem. And you know, there's when you think about suicide in a public health context, there's it's just not given the same attention. I think this is where your question about stigma comes in to play. So, for example, a major public health problem before coronavirus, let's say, it was the flu, right? But you couldn't walk into a grocery store, drugstore without seeing signs that said, get your flu shot, fight the flu, cover your cough, wash your hands. Same thing with motor vehicle accidents, another big public health problem. Fasten your seatbelt. Kids have to take a driver's test. Everyone has to get a license before they drive. All these public health initiatives have actually reduced deaths from things like the flu, from things like motor vehicle accidents. But how many people have walked into a grocery store and see a sign for the suicide prevention lifeline or the crisis text line, right? So it's still so stigmatized that we don't have that. And we're still, as a community, we're not talking about this pretty big killer of people in our country.
That is a staggering statistic. Second leading cause of death for children. Tell me about, I know that you guys have some programs where you're trying to do more outreach for young people around suicide. I know there's a lot of myths about, well, if you talk about suicide, then someone's going to try to attempt suicide or complete suicide. But that's not the case. And what are you doing at NIMH and the work that you're doing to reach out to younger people to begin to open up this discussion?
Sure. Well, it's a great question. NIMH actually has a goal of reducing the suicide rate by 20% by the year 2025. And we have all kinds of initiatives. But one thing that we're really trying to do is get all doctors and nurses across the country to screen young people, old people for suicide, all people, all medical patients. It's one of the worries people have, especially parents, is that if you ask a child about suicide, that you're going to put the idea into their head. You're going to make them think about it. But it's actually a myth. And there's at least four research studies that have refuted this myth. And in fact, it's the opposite. So the best way to keep somebody from killing themselves is to ask directly, are you thinking of killing yourself? If they weren't thinking about it before, you're not going to put that idea into their head. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
So it's actually a way to start the conversation, which a lot of people are afraid to start for good reason, because it's a scary thing to hear a no answer to that question, right?
It is. And what we also, when we talk about children, we think, well, how early do we talk to our children about this? And with kids nowadays, and I've got two teenagers, they are so connected with everything that's happening globally. And if there is a tragedy of a young person committing suicide or completing suicide in some small town thousands of miles away, it's right there at their fingertips. I mean, they are exposed to these things already. So, I mean, what have you found? How do you approach young people and with these programs that you're working with? But, you know, is how young is too young? Or, you know, what do people say to kids when they talk about suicide?
Right. Well, you bring up a really good point, because a lot of times when people worry about the myth of putting an idea into someone's head, that's a very different, asking someone about suicide in a very caring and compassionate way is a very different than suicide contagion, which is actually a real problem. Mm-hmm. So when kids are exposed in the media, on TV, in the news to suicides that are graphically described, and there's actually guidelines for media on how to describe a suicide event. That's actually dangerous, because there is a contagion effect that could happen to someone who's vulnerable, like a young child. That's very different than asking someone in a very caring way, are you thinking of killing yourself? It's not, those are two very distinct scenarios. Mm-hmm. And so it is really important to, let's say, parents who know their kids better than anybody, right? To say something like, you know, you don't seem like yourself lately. I just want to check in with you. Are you okay? And if they're not feeling so good, do you ever think about killing yourself? Like, that's actually an act of love to ask that question, and then to be present and stick around for the answer. And to really listen.
I guess that's it, right? I mean, to observe, to recognize maybe some markers, some indication that someone may be having these thoughts, and then the direct ask. I know that we were creating a suicide prevention program for people that were entering clinical research studies but didn't meet criteria because of suicidal ideation. And a lot of the advocates that we worked with who obviously you work with best practices like you guys at NIMH, that you have to be direct, you have to be succinct, mm-hmm. and you have to be you have to ask the question that no one wants to ask, or like you said, are afraid. Do you have plans to kill yourself? It is such a difficult phrase to say out loud, but how? I mean, it is absolutely necessary. We feel comfortable with that.
Absolutely. And we are really trying to, get all medical settings, like all pediatricians. What if every single pediatrician in the country, when they saw their patients, asked directly, you know, are you thinking of killing yourself? I just have to check in with you about this. This happens in our country. We need to know. It's a hard question to ask, because I think people are very scared of the answer. And I think that if you didn't feel like you had to fix it in the moment, and you could just be the bridge to getting this person help, or just being the ear that hears their pain, and know that that is a tremendous gift, then I think more people would ask.
You guys have some tremendous resources on your website. a lot of information, mostly about this, at nimh.nih.gov/ASQ. And it really is kind of, the, I guess, the foundation of that ask suicide screening question. So, you know, you talk about PCPs and those direct caregivers. I mean, that's important that these frontline individuals who have those touch points, that they are the ones who are asking the hard questions sometimes. I know that recently I went to go see my PCP, and there was actually a little mental health questionnaire that I answered beforehand, and I was so impressed. And I was like, thank you for offering this to people that come into this office, a very quick mental health screening. But next time I go, I'm going to say, can you take it a step further? There's about suicide. Do you ask the questions you need to ask when it comes to suicide? Like you said, there are a lot of hard questions, but there's some incredible resources on your website. Do you want to talk any about maybe some of the resources you guys offer for folks?
Sure. Well, so we offer a lot of tools for healthcare providers, and we do this because when you look at studies of people who have died by suicide, you find that the majority, and this is kids and adults, and I'm talking 80% of people who die by suicide, have visited a healthcare provider months and sometimes weeks before their death. So you would think, like, this is a tremendous opportunity for capturing these people who are at risk, identifying the risk, and then getting them help. But the problem is that they usually go to a doctor's office for a medical complaint, right? And so if someone doesn't, they're not going to open up and say, I'm thinking of killing myself. So if someone doesn't ask them directly, are you thinking of killing yourself? They most likely don't talk about it. So the majority of suicide attempters go unrecognized because healthcare providers are not screened. The majority of healthcare settings don't screen for suicide risk. And so what we do is we provide on that website, on the Ask Toolkit, it's called, we give tools for doctors and nurses to screen. We give assessment. We have assessment tools. We have scripts for the healthcare providers to introduce the screening. We have flyers that you hand out to parents when you're assessing and going to screen. And then we also have resources available that we suggest everybody have in hand. So everybody should have the Suicide Prevention Lifeline. That's 1-800-273, and then it spells out the word TALK, 8255. That's a 24/7 hotline with trained people on the other end, and anyone could call it. You can call it if you're worried about yourself. You can call it if you're worried about a family member or a friend or a colleague. And then there's something newer, is the crisis text line, which is you text the word home or start or actually any word to 741-741. And that's also a 24/7 lifeline for people who are more comfortable with texting than talking on the phone.
It's hard, I'm sure, for people that are at that moment where they feel that the only solution is to take their own life, to reach out. And so it really is incumbent on all of us to be aware, to be there as a helping hand, and to offer sometimes very simple resources like the Suicide Prevention Lifeline number or the text number. And it could be just as simple as someone picking up the phone that could change their life. I was talking to a young lady yesterday that I worked with. She had struggled with bipolar disorder for years. And she said, Luke, you know, I want to share my story about my suicide attempt. And it was 15 years ago. And she said, you know, had I been successful with that, I would have never met my husband. I would have never repaired the relationship with my family that I lost because of my illness. And all the things she's experienced at that, you know, since then. And I know at that moment, she felt it was the only option. But now she can look back and say, I'm living a beautiful life. And sometimes we need to be there for people right at that moment where they need us and remind them that things can and do get better.
Yes, that is so important, because how we think of suicide is it when someone's having suicidal thoughts, it's just unbearable pain. Mm. And we believe that it moves in states. And so this is why it's so important to think about the safety in the home of the person who's having suicidal thoughts. Because I can't tell you how many patients I've spoken to that have tried a suicide attempt. And when I ask them, you know, or if we're thinking of a suicide attempt, and when I ask them, why didn't you go through with it? They'll say, because my cousin came home and walked in the room, or my wife called, you know, just as I was about to do it, or something else disturbed and disrupted their attempt. And, you know, if you can disrupt someone's attempt by locking up pills, you know, everybody's got a medicine cabinet full of Tylenol and Advil, which you think are pretty benign, but those are things people can use to kill themselves. So mm-hmm. when you lock up the pills, lock up the guns, the bullets, or get them out of the house, those are actually ways to save somebody's life because it disrupts their plan. Now, you know, some people say, well, if someone has a plan to do something and you disrupt it, they'll just find another way. And research actually shows that that's not true. Mm-hmm. So, for example, they used to put nets under bridges. And people, you know, critics of that would say, well, if you pull up to a bridge and there's a net under it and you're intent on killing yourself, you'll find another bridge. It turns out that that's not true, that nets under bridges have saved lives. Mm-hmm. And so it's all about helping the person through their suicidal state so that they could get to a place where their thinking is more clearer. You know, having suicidal thoughts is not a normal reaction to stress. There's some breakdown in the brain that's going on. It's not good cognitive thinking. And so you have to help that person through that time where their thinking is distorted until they make it to another period of time where their better thinking comes into play.
Because once that spiral begins for some people, the only way they can pull out of it is have someone there to help them.
Exactly.
And so it's important that we are all part of the solution and that we all feel comfortable with just saying the word suicide and to know that it is real. And it touches the lives of a lot of people. We would never hesitate to talk to somebody if we knew that they had cancer, or we knew that they had some other type of ailment that that people would be there to assist them with, and suicide is no different.
Right, and we used to whisper the word cancer, right? That 20 years ago, people yes. would say, he has cancer.
Right, the C word.
I had a patient tell me during one of our studies, someone said, you know, they used to whisper the word cancer and now they whisper the word suicide, and hopefully soon they won't be whispering the word suicide. That it's something that you don't have to make someone feel so alien for feeling it, and it can be talked about, and you can be a listening post for someone who wants to air their pain and have someone else hear it.
Because I'm sure that statistically suicide has been thought about by, I would assume, most individuals that walk the face of the earth. At some point, they felt so desperate. So it has somehow affected us, probably personally. But then again, being there as a support for others. And then if you know that you may have a history of it, that you'd take the measures to protect yourself, whether it be changing your environment or making sure that you have someone that you can confide in at moments where you feel like you're beginning that spiral. Listen, you guys are doing incredible work at NIMH, and it's wonderful that you're taking the mantle on this particular issue with COVID going on and isolation and the increase of number of people who are reaching out for mental health services or some type of assistance. Unfortunately, and I hear that we're still kind of eyeing the statistics at this point, but unfortunately, sometimes the increase in mental health stress also increases the likelihood of someone wanting to try to commit suicide. So we have to keep an open conversation on all these things. Thank you so much for joining us. We could talk forever, and I appreciate you talking about the fact that it's okay to go to our children or our nieces or nephews or young ones and say, you know what? This is a part of our society. It's a part of our life. And if something comes up, I am here for you. And
yes.
Begin to start that conversation.
Yes. You should make sure your child or any child you know has one trusted adult they can talk to. Mm-hmm. And it's often not the parent. So parents shouldn't be insulted that that's not the case. It doesn't mean you didn't do a good job. It just means that sometimes kids feel more comfortable talking to an aunt or an uncle or a coach or a teacher.
Or their peers,
yeah.
Right?
Well,
let's talk about that just for 2 seconds.
Yes,
that's
yes.
what I'm saying, right? If you as a child know that a friend of yours may be in that space, you know, then that child to be able to feel that they can go to an adult and say, "I'm concerned about this person," right?
They should be taught you. You don't keep secrets about suicide. Yeah. Well, my friend will be mad because he told me not to tell anybody. Let your friend be mad at you. It's better for him to be mad and alive than dead. So we teach kids it's good to talk to your friends, and they do. And
yes.
And recognizing pure suicidal risk factors is huge. But every kid needs a trusted adult to talk to.
As you guys continue your research, I would love to come back with you again. When you find these best practices that are evolving, ways that people can open up the conversation and all the work that you guys are doing through NIMH and NIH. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Horowitz. It's been enlightening.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I want to thank you guys for listening in today and supporting the work of the STAR Coalition and obviously NIMH and NIH and others as we continue to bring folks like Dr. Horowitz and others together to really kind of shape the future of brain health and suicide prevention and research. Be sure to follow us on social media and join us at our website at www.thestar.org, thestarr.org, and learn more about how you can be a part of the solution. Thank you guys for joining, and we'll talk soon. All right.